This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Marissa Melton. U.S. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer warned on Sunday about the threat of violence at the January 20th inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden, especially in the aftermath of last week's storming of the U.S. Capitol by thousands of supporters of President Donald Trump. Schumer, who is soon to be the Senate Majority Leader, said he spoke with FBI Director Christopher Wray on Saturday to urge him to pursue those who took part in breaking into the Capitol building and to guard against further attacks. Washington Mayor Muriel Bowser has sent a letter dated January 9th to Acting Homeland Security Chief Chad Wolf, asking to extend a national security designation currently surrounding the inauguration from the usual 3 days to a 2-week period starting Monday and extending to January 24th. The mayor says she wants federal authorities to reject requests for public gathering permits in the district throughout that period. Indonesian aviation authorities said Sunday they had located the two black boxes from the Sriwijaya Air passenger plane that crashed shortly after takeoff from Jakarta on Saturday. Speaking to reporters, the head of Indonesia's Transport Safety Agency said that divers hope to retrieve the black boxes soon. The devices contain recordings of cockpit voice and flight data that could help officials understand why the Boeing 737-500 with 62 people on board crashed into the Java Sea. An official with Indonesia's National Search and Rescue Agency confirmed earlier that wreckage had been found from the passenger plane. You can keep up on this story and all those that we're covering at our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. North Korea's state media reports leader Kim Jong-un was given a new title, General Secretary of the Ruling Workers' Party, a post held by his late father and grandfather. It's largely seen as a symbolic appointment because Kim has already been the top party leader, but it is apparently aimed at bolstering his authority as Kim grapples with growing economic challenges at home. The Korean Central News Agency said Monday the party's ongoing Congress, the first in its kind in 5 years, announced Kim's new title on Sunday during its 6-day session. Kazakhstan's authoritarian ruling party swept to victory in an opposition-free parliamentary election on Sunday. An exit poll by government-sanctioned pollster Public Opinion gave the Nur Otan party nearly 72% of the votes and showed two other pro-government parties crossing the 7% vote threshold. Exit polls are tightly controlled in Kazakhstan. It's an ex-Soviet country that has never held an election that Western vote monitors have deemed free or fair. President Kasym-Jomart Tokayev has pledged gradual political reforms since being placed into the top post by former leader Nursultan Nazarbayev, who ended nearly 3 decades as head of state in early 2019. So far, however, those promises of reform have not resulted in concrete action. Nationalist politician Sadir Japarov won a landslide victory on Sunday in Kyrgyzstan's snap presidential election, which was triggered by the collapse of the previous government. Preliminary results indicate Japarov has won almost 80% of the vote in the Central Asian nation, which is closely allied with Russia. The results were cited by Kyrgyzstan's Central Election Commission. More than 80% of voters also supported a proposal to reform the constitution to give the president greater powers compared to parliament, according to the Election Commission. Until last October, Japarov was in jail for kidnapping a provincial governor as part of a political protest, but his supporters released him from jail and propelled him to the prime minister's office and then to the presidency. Japarov has repeatedly pledged to maintain a close relationship with former Soviet overlord Moscow. And in a highly unusual move, American diplomats have drafted 2 cables condemning President Donald Trump's incitement of the deadly assault on the Capitol and calling for administration officials to support invoking the 25th Amendment, which would allow removing him from office. Via remote, I'm Marissa Melton. From Washington, you're listening to VOA News.
We'll be right back. Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, January 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. East African community observers call for peaceful elections in Uganda.
I ask to everyone for me to encourage people and all stakeholders and all politicians to participate to the vote.
The UN Human Rights Commission expresses concern about human rights violations ahead of Uganda's election. Lawyers for a detained Zimbabwe journalist are going to court today to demand his unconditional release. Anti-narcotic officers in Gambia seized over 2 tons of cocaine, and Malawi's president is troubled by the surge in coronavirus cases in his country.
The speed at which the virus has been spreading since Christmas is very disturbing. 66 new infections were confirmed between Christmas Day and Boxing Day, which is putting too much pressure on our health system and health workers.
And a high school for pregnant teenagers and mothers in Kenya. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Only 2 days left before Uganda's January 14 presidential and parliamentary elections, former Burundian President Domitien Ndayizeye is urging Ugandans to have peaceful elections. Ndayizeye, who is leading the East Africa Community Observers Mission, says Ugandans should turn out in big numbers to choose their leaders. Reporter Mungumi Davis Rakarinji has more from Kampala.
While launching a team of election observers from the East African community on Sunday, former Burundi President Domitien Ndayizeye asked Ugandans to conduct peaceful elections and vote for candidates of their choice without intimidation.
I ask to everyone for me to encourage people and all stakeholders and all politicians to participate to the vote. And to all politicians, if you don't win today, you can't win tomorrow. If not in 5 years, it can be in 10 years.
Also addressing reporters over the weekend, General J.J. Odongo, Uganda Internal Affairs Minister, said members of the Ugandan Police and Uganda People's Defense Forces, UPDF, have all it takes to ensure tranquility during and after the elections. Odongo said the police and the army are mandated by law to ensure they protect both people and property.
I want us to remember that the elections have not come upon us just like that. It's like when you're having Christmas, you know at the end of the year there will be another Christmas. Similarly, we have been aware that we are going to have these elections this time. Therefore, police and all other security agencies have been preparing and building capacity to ensure that we shall have peaceful elections and peace after election.
Adolf Mwesige, Uganda Minister of Defense, said without providing evidence that security organs have intelligence reports that some members of the opposition are planning to cause havoc during and after the elections. He called on Ugandans to reject such politicians.
My appeal is that let us stay calm. Ugandans will pronounce themselves. The security sector, all the security organs of the state are ready and very ready to make sure that the rights of all Ugandans in this campaign period and during and after the election are secured.
Uganda Police Chief Martin Okoth Ochola sparked controversy when he said security officers will not stop harassing reporters.
It is not that we are targeting the media, no. We are trying to protect your lives. We are telling you there is danger there. For you insisting you must go where there is danger. Yes, we shall beat you for your own sake. To help you understand that you don't go there. Yes. We shall use reasonable force to ensure that you don't go where there's a risk.
The opposition have been complaining about an even playing field during the campaign. The authorities have arrested opposition candidates and their supporters in the name of enforcing coronavirus measures. Some journalists covering the campaigns of opposition candidates have been tear-gassed, beaten, and sometimes thrown in prison. But Police Chief Ochola says the police have no reason to apologize. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji, Kampala, Uganda.
In Zimbabwe, lawyers for prominent journalist Hopewell Chingono are going to court today, Monday, to argue for his immediate release from a maximum security prison where he is being detained following his arrest on Friday. He tweeted that police beat a child to death while enforcing COVID-19 lockdown measures. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, media monitoring groups fear Chingono's arrest, his third in 6 months, may be part of efforts by President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government to stifle freedom of expression on social media.
Journalist Hopo Chingono arrived Saturday at the Harare Magistrate Court in full personal protective equipment, PPE, complaining about his continued persecution.
Because we tell them the truth, we comment about their corruption, they look for frivolous charges to throw at me. But as a journalist, I'm covered by the law.
He was to sit for close to 4 hours as prosecutors looked for PPE to wear before proceeding with his case. Chingono says he has been in contact with two people who have since tested positive for coronavirus. Harrison Nkomo of Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights told the reporters that his client, Chingono, will be acquitted of the latest charge of peddling falsehoods.
We are challenging placement of Hopo on the remand. The basis of our challenge is that they are proceeding in respect of a piece of legislation which has been, which was, I don't want to delve much into my argument.
In 2014, Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court removed from the country's statutes the criminalization of the publication of false statements undermining public confidence in the uniformed forces. Thabani Moyo leads the Media Institute of Southern Africa in Zimbabwe. He says this third arrest of Chingono is intended to intimidate citizens and journalists in Zimbabwe.
This immediate case points to a clear case of trying to effect chilling effects on the media. How do you come to a conclusion that Hopo has violated any law of the country for providing an opinion on a video clip that has thousands of people communicating on it? Why arriving at Hopo, a journalist for that matter? So it is an assault on media. Secondly, it's meant to send chilling effect not only to the media but to the users of the online spaces. So this is a dangerous trend which we are seeing.
Monica Mchangwa, Zimbabwe's information minister, said Saturday she would only comment on the matter after the courts have disposed of the case. Meanwhile, Chingono is scheduled back in court Monday when his lawyer is expected to challenge the law under which he was charged Thursday. Chingono was free on bail since last year for two charges when he was picked up for the latest charge. In July 2020, Chingono was arrested for advocating on social media anti-government protests being organized by activists. Then he was arrested in November for obstruction of justice and demeaning the country's National Prosecution Authority. Chingono denies both charges. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Batty in Washington. Today is Monday, January 11th. Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera says he is saddened by statistics showing a recent spike in coronavirus infections in the country. Chakwera announced in a Sunday radio address that he was starting a 21-day fast to seek divine intervention into the pandemic that is on the rise again. Health experts say the situation needs more than prayers. Lamek Masina reports.
Malawi has recently seen a surge in coronavirus cases. Since Thursday, the country has been confirming more cases than ever recorded. For example, on Saturday, Malawi recorded 381 cases with 12 deaths, the largest figure in a single day since it recorded its first three cases on April 2. Chakwera noted the surge is largely because many people, including him, had ignored preventive measures.
Many of us relaxed our vigilance against the virus. And now we're paying the price. We're paying the price because many of us are back to the old ways of not wearing masks. Many of us are back to the old ways of not maintaining our distance from others. Many of us are back to the old ways of not washing our hands regularly. When I say many of us, I'm including myself.
President Chakwera has on several occasions been criticized for ignoring prevention measures during meetings. In October, Chakwera faced public criticism for not wearing a face covering when he met with his Tanzanian counterpart, John Magufuli, during a scheduled three-day official visit to Tanzania. This month, Chakwera was also criticized after he was seen without face coverings and shaking hands with American singer Madonna at his state residence in the capital, Lilongwe. Madonna has four adopted children from Malawi and co-founded a charity there. But in his Sunday radio address, Chakwera said it's now time for everyone in the country to return to following preventive measures.
The speed at which the virus has been spreading since Christmas is very disturbing. 66 new infections were confirmed between Christmas Day and Boxing Day. And in the fortnight that has passed since, over 1,500 new infections have been confirmed, which is an average of over 120 new infections every day, which is putting too much pressure on our health system and health workers. This cannot be allowed to continue.
Chakwera said he has directed the Ministries of Homeland Security and Health to scale up the enforcement of COVID-19 guidelines with immediate effect. COVID-19 is the disease caused by the coronavirus. President Chakwera, also former head of the Malawi Assemblies of God Church, said he has personally joined his church in a program of a 21-day fast and prayers for God's intervention into the pandemic. Maziko Matemba heads Malawi's Health and Rights Education Program. He says the prayers would only help bring deep reflection on the impact of COVID-19, but the solution is to put measures in place to stop surging cases, especially at the community level. Ministry of Health statistics show that more than 60% of confirmed cases are through local transmission.
The focus was more to do with case management, but now what has happened now, we need to give resources to our frontline community health workers, which can also be supported by the community organization or civil society structures or community volunteers who are willing to support so that they can manage issues of gatherings. They can also manage other issues which can happen at community level.
Matemba says the government should also ensure that the returnees escaping economic problems in South Africa are quarantined and tested before they are allowed to go to their respective communities. The Minister of Health says about 500 people who returned from South Africa Saturday are being kept at an isolation center in Blantyre for COVID-19 tests. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Anti-narcotic officers have seized over 2 tons of cocaine found in a shipment that came from South America. Reporter Pandere Umbai has been following the story and reports from Raleigh, North Carolina, to USA.
In what appeared to be the largest cocaine seizure ever recorded in West Africa, Gambian anti-narcotic officers said the drug seizure was made during a joint security operation. Over 2 tons of cocaine was found concealed in a container shipment from South America and was destined for the Gambia. Usman Sediba is the spokesperson for the National Drug Law Enforcement Agency.
So after this discovery, on Monday, the 4th of January, 2020, a physical search was conducted on the container, but was found to be containing what was only deemed to be salt. Search continued as investigation into the matter continued, resulting in the discovery of 118 bags contained of cocaine in one of the containers that was numbered SUDU 7531754.
Speaking at a news conference over the weekend, Sediba said efforts are underway to get to the bottom of the drug catch.
Initial finding into the matter suggests that the container belongs to one Banta Keita, who holds a French passport with the number 17CE91360. According to his passport biodata, that is a biographical data, he's said to be born on the 3rd January 1984. He's a resident of Fajara M section.
At least one person has been arrested, while the main suspect is said to be on the run.
Sheriff, who was their local contact person, is presently in custody, helping the officers with the investigation, while the manhunt for Mr. Banta Kinta continues.
This is not the first time that the Gambia has recorded such a drug bust. Back in June of 2010, about 2 tons of cocaine was seized in the village of Bonto. The Director General of Gambia Spy Agency, Usman Sow, in a recent testimony before the Truth Commission, said some of his colleagues were involved in drug trafficking during Jammeh's rule.
Do you know a person called Mosquito?
Yes, Lord Council.
What is his full name?
Mosquito is Lamin, I think.
Lamin Touré.
Yes, Lamin Touré.
Where did he work?
Lamin Touré worked before at the NIA and then at the drug squad. And he was laid off.
Why?
Well, according to information, he was involved in suspicious drug activities.
Dudu Ja is the spokesman for the APRC party. Ja is concerned about the government's slow pace of tackling drug cases.
What is most worrying, the progress of such cases, that is action taken by government, seems to be something people keep lingering about. What step has government taken? We're always asking.
Ja also says seized drugs should be destroyed to avoid its recirculation into the market.
I believe the end result is not the National Drug Law Enforcement Agency alone. Government has a stake. That is warehouses where these drugs are being kept. How does it end up? Are they being destroyed? Is it smuggled again? You know, that should be the responsibility of the government of the day to see to it that whatever is confiscated has to be destroyed. And stiffer and stronger measures must be taken to not to allow drugs to be peddled in this country.
The leader of the United Democratic Party, Usainu Dabo, has called for a swift investigation into the matter. Analysts warn that the Gambia is at the risk of becoming a drug transit point. Just a few weeks ago, more than 500 kilograms of Moroccan hashish was seized from drug traffickers. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Kenya has set up a high school for pregnant teenagers and lactating or breastfeeding teens to ensure that girls will get pregnant while still in school will finish their studies. This comes at a time when Kenya has recorded a high number of teen pregnancies since schools were closed March last year. As Marie Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, the school, which is set to commence classes today, Monday, has a daycare to take care of teen mothers' children while their mothers study.
In developing countries, at least 20,000 girls under the age of 18 give birth every day. This is according to the United Nations Fund for Population Activities that says most of the girls' lives change radically as part of them and their education and job diminish as the girl becomes more vulnerable to poverty. Elizabeth Wanjiru, founder of the Serene Haven Rescue Center, the only teen mother's high school in Kenya, said that she embraced the idea to have teenage mothers to go to school and achieve their dreams.
I have been a teen mom, so I have walked the journey. I know how it is. So originally, I started the rest center, you know, a safe house for teenage moms. Then I realized it can't reach many girls because they are the only accommodate girls who are young and pregnant and alone. They have no one else to turn to. They don't have parents. So I realized this girl will miss out on classes because she has a small baby and nobody to look after the baby. So that's why I thought about the school. And so inside the school, we'll still run a daycare. A girl goes to class in the evening. She comes and picks her baby, goes back with her baby to the dormitory.
Around the world, teenage pregnancy robs girls of their childhood, their education, and futures. Most of these pregnancies tend to be the result of having few choices in life. In Kenya, between March and July 2020, the survey conducted by Kenya Health Information System said that at least 152,000 Kenyan teenage girls became pregnant, a 40% increase in the country's monthly average. Wanjiru said the teachers hired to help the teen mothers achieve their dreams are to be considerate of the girls' situation.
Once in a while, there's a counselor who will be coming to school to talk to the teachers because they have to understand that this is not your usual student. They have to be careful with these girls. Even the examples they give in class, they have to be really, really careful with them. They also have to understand through a lot of issues in their lives. Some of them have been through rejection. Some of them have been through heartbreaks and a lot of heartaches. Some of them have been insulted by people out there. So basically, we are the only source of hope. So if these teachers break them, then it should be the end of them.
According to the UN agency, leaving school jeopardizes girls' future economic prospects and excludes the girls from the opportunities in life. Wanjiru, however, says the school is set to begin its classes today, Monday, as most of the girls reported to school over the weekend.
If the numbers increase, and I know they will, the school where we are leasing has got a lot of land, so we can expand from there. That's one way. Way number two, we can expand in a different school or in a different county. So far, so good. We've been able to admit our first two students today. I'm really excited about that. And so we should be starting classes on Monday because most parents have confirmed they'll bring their girls then.
In Kenya, very few teenage mothers get the opportunity to go back to school because of stigma, even after the government has given them opportunity to study after childbirth. And this school might be a good cause for many, since they share same experience. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale, Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the Confederation of African Football organized African Nations Championships. Host nation Cameroon has agreed to let football fans attend matches ahead of the forthcoming sixth edition of the African Nations Championships, otherwise known as CHAN. The three-week tournament will take place from January 16th to February 7th after it was rescheduled from April 4th to the 25th last year due to the outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic. The announcement comes a week after the Confederation of African Football authorized the presence of fans in stadium for competitions. Staying with CAF, the schedule for the 2020-2021 CAF Champions League has been announced. The group stages will kick off on the weekend of February 12th to the 13th, with the group matches completed on April 9th to the 10th. The top two teams in each group advance to the quarterfinals. AS Vita Club of DR Congo, Al Ahly of Egypt, Al Merrikh of Sudan, Simba of Tanzania are all in Group A, while Group B will have the likes of Chabab Bouzidad of Algeria, TP Mazembe of DR Congo, Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa, and Al Hilal of Sudan. In Group C, Petro Atletico of Angola, Horuya of Guinea, Wydad Casablanca of Morocco, Kaizer Chiefs of South Africa will battle for the two top spots from the group, and in Group D, Mouloudia Ouldja of Algeria, Zamalek of Egypt, Tinugueth of Senegal, Esperance of Tunisia will fight for the quarterfinal slots. Staying with football news, South Africa striker Percy Tau is back at English Premier League side Brighton and Hove Albion after a series of loans and is now raring to go in the Premier League. Brighton's Percy Tau joins a number of South African footballers who have piled their trade in the UK. The 26-year-old trained with his Premier League side for the first time this past weekend and seems poised for a debut soon.
We normally don't have so many of our players playing in England. We used to in the past, but then at the moment we don't have much. It's also giving them pride to see me with Brighton.
Away from football news to badminton, where 63 players featured in the Badminton Nairobi Open, which began on Sunday at the Ski Union Sports Club in Nairobi. The championship is a build-up to the upcoming Olympic qualifying rounds that will be held in Uganda, Kenya and South Africa. Peter Muchiri is chair Badminton Kenya.
For us, actually, it's a race against time because, we have two players who are actually on course to qualify for Olympics. And we have two international tournaments coming up in Feb and March. So for us, it's a race against time to prepare a team.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, January 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a great week.